Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
Well, I guess I'm supposed to say Happy Father's Day for starters, and maybe I'll go just beyond just saying Happy Father's Day. Let me tell you what we're really going to be doing in the main part of the show. I'm going to be talking about careers in marketing with a special guest who knows a lot about it, because it seems like everything I hear is there's marketing. It's more marketing. It's more marketing. We've got to market, social media marketing, database marketing, Facebook marketing. So we're going to talk about careers and jobs in marketing. But because it is Father's Day, let me do a two-minute, if you will, an ode to men. To the blue-collar men, who, to earn extra money to support themselves and their families, forego a comfortable desk job and instead take jobs that few of us would do. From cleaning our sewers so we can flush our toilets, and eradicating rats from our basement so we don't get diseases, to precariously perching themselves on our roofs, sealing the roofs, so our homes don't get drenched. To the men that protect us. For example, the media is careful to call firefighters rather than firemen. But this morning, I looked at dozens of photos of the firefighters that are attempting to stop that 55,000-acre Colorado fire. Every one was a man. And in the 9/11 terrorist attack, there were 343 firefighters, not firemen, who died. 343 of them died. Care to guess how many of them were men? All 343. Yet we keep saying firefighters rather than firemen. And there, of course, are women firefighters, and I do not mean to denigrate them in any way. This is Father's Day, and I want to give due homage, I think, to a group that maybe is not getting, they're ridiculed so much in the media and in the colleges. To the white-collar men, who get ridiculed all the time as being, you know, evil, unethical business bastards who will do whatever it takes to make an extra buck. But there are a lot of white-collar men who are not like that at all, who, to earn extra money to support themselves or their families, will endure long, difficult, technical training. Disproportionately, those who do take those long, difficult technical master's degrees or whatever are men. And more men are willing to uproot themselves and their families to move to some godforsaken place every few years so they can get a promotion or get the skills to put on their resume. They deserve a tip of the cap, too. And what about the professional men, like physicians, who, to earn more money for themselves and their families, choose a high-stress specialty, a highly demanding specialty like surgery, where they often must be awakened in the middle of the night for an emergency surgery. Imagine having to do that at 3 or 4 in the morning. Rather than choose one of the more pleasant specialties with regular hours, like pediatrics or general practice. On Father's Day, do not those professional men deserve a tip of the cap? And what about the men who serve and die in the military? They get a slight differential in combat pay, but it doesn't begin to compensate for the risk. Again, although the media is very careful to always say the men and women serving in the military, guess what percentage of the military deaths have been men? 98%. In Iraq and Afghanistan, 97.5%. Yes, women earn 77 cents on the dollar. But there just may be reasons other than we live in a sexist patriarchy that suppresses women. So today on Father's Day, to all the hard-working men that must endure the media's and colleges' frequent portraying of men as overpaid and inferior to women, just watch any commercials, sitcoms, dramas, even nonfiction media, today, at least on Father's Day, at least from this talk show host, I salute you. And now, turning to the main topic of today's show, as promised, Neil Cohen is a lecturer in marketing in San Francisco State. He's been marketing consultant to entities from Sega, the video game company. I just saw a big billboard for Sega, some stupid Sonic 4 or whatever on 101. To Yahoo, so they are a billboard too. From McDonald's to Ralph's Supermarkets, from MTI Micro Fuel Cells to San Francisco Airport. He even was brought in to consult on what San Francisco State's branding should be. And he's just landed a full-time, he's not just one of these guys, those who can do, those who can't teach. The guy has just landed a full-time VP marketing job at Visage Mobile, which manages businesses' mobile presence. Neil's been a guest speaker at business schools from Wharton, back east at Penn, to Chicago in the middle of the country, to Berkeley. And this morning, he is my guest on Work with Marty Nemco. Neil Cohen, welcome.
Thanks, Marty. Good morning to you.
Good. And thank you for Carter, his son, who brought in beignets to make me fatter than I already am. Damn you! Okay, I guess. Okay, I'll be good.
They are good, though.
They are good if you like bad carbs and fat and sugar. They're great.
Yeah, but they're good for your soul, Marty, and that's what's important.
Right. Tell that to my GP, because I don't want to see a cardiologist. Right now, I only got a GP. Right. Explain that to him. Anyway, all right. In this tough job market, everybody's interested in what people do to actually land a job. Walk me through what you actually did to land the job at Visage Mobile.
Well, interestingly enough, it wasn't a job that I was looking for, and sometimes that's how things find you. I think there's a couple of things people have to keep in mind. Everybody has a professional network. Sadly, a lot of times when people contact their network, it's when they need something.
Right.
And I think everybody's been in the place where they haven't heard from somebody for 2 years. Suddenly they get a phone call, and you get that phone call, and you know they either got let go of their job or were looking for a change in their career.
Right, you know, it's a BS. Oh, hi, how are you? How's the family? BS, BS. They don't give a crap. They really just want to get help. Right.
And so the first thing I would tell your listeners is stay in touch with your network because you like your network.
It's true.
Not because you need something.
And I you noticed I sighed there. I sighed there because that is almost emblematic of what we're talking about the move in this country, a reallocation of our resources from the steak to the sizzle, from learning to get better at your craft to marketing. If you're spending all this time, whether you're looking for a job or not, networking, building relationships with people, it's not time you're spending getting better at your craft, etc. Does that worry you that we're telling people to spend more time on marketing themselves? Marketing the product, you know, ever larger proportions of budgets of companies are going from research and development and reallocated to marketing, packaging, branding, etc. No?
Well, let's start with the first part of that. There's nothing wrong with people marketing themselves and creating, let's say, a brand Marty or a brand Neil or my son, brand Carter. You know, how you present yourselves and you know, are you on time? Are you smart? Are you a contributor? Are you a team player? For example, when you network with somebody, is it just to get something out of there? Or is it just like, hey, what can I do for you versus what you can do for me? Do you stay in touch with people because you like them and you're interested in them and you're engaged with them? Or do you stay in touch with them because you need something from them? And this gets back to your first question. How did I get the job
exactly
at Visage?
Right?
Well, let's circle it back.
Yep.
Which was, I was just staying in touch with somebody I respected and admired, and they had started this company, and I said, "Boy, that sounds amazing." I was just at this conference the other day. I'll fill you in the conference. You tell me about your new gig. Nothing in it was about me getting something from him or him from me. And while we sat there and met, he said, "Like, boy, we'd love to have you come at work at our company. Would you leave consulting that you've done for 12 years, the last 12 years, to come to work for us?"
Did you have to do anything to close the deal, or was it as simple as that? I mean, it's one thing to have had this kind of this meeting, this and that, this you weren't looking for a job meeting, and they say, you know, it might be really good to have you, but it's very rare that that says, oh, just come work for it. Was there a series of things you did to close the deal, if you will?
It wasn't a fait accompli. I still had to meet the CEO. I still had to meet the existing marketing director that was at the company. I had to meet the other coworkers and people that would be presumably my peers. And my statement to to Jim, my friend Jim Kyles, was, can we do a try to buy, if the CEO likes me, can we do a try to buy relationship? In other words, I'm trying you as much as you're trying me out. And we met a couple of times. I interviewed people. It seemed like, hey, look, we need a little bit of leadership here. Let's do a 1 month contract and see where it goes. And I think we both knew where it was going to go after about a week and a half or 2 weeks.
Okay. A couple of things there that are embedded important. It's normally job seekers resent employers for wanting to do a trial period. It's really very gutsy and good of you. It shows it's coming from a position of strength for you to say, hey, let's try a month. That's the opposite of the desperation that most jobs, and you're lucky you're about 50 or something, or you know, you're not a kid.
53. Yeah.
53. So you're not usually when people are over 50, they start to get ever more desperate and show it. And yet here you are, 53, and you weren't desperate, I want a job. You were independent consulting, which is hard to make a living these days as a
yes.
consultant, and you still had the confidence or the poker ability to say, hey, let's just try it for a month. How important is that appearing not desperate?
I believe that you have to have confidence in your own abilities. And you know, when you're trying for a job, you're not just joining them. You know, they're also, in other words, you have to like them as much as they like
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people, you know, it's nice to be asked to come work somewhere, or it's nice to be asked to come for an interview. That's very flattering. It's nice to be wanted. But it also has to be right for you as an individual. And I think the challenge that most people have to say is that you have to differentiate between the interview process and being asked and that flattering part of it, and what is it that you really want to do. And I have a saying when I was pitching business all the time, you have to be willing to lose a piece of business to get a piece of business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's the same thing with interviewing or anything else. You got to be willing to lose that job to get that job. If you're not yourself, if you don't go there being yourself and packaging yourself correctly and representing who you truly are and what you can offer, then what's the point? They're going to find out anyway.
I want to see if we can get one more takeaway before we move to marketing careers, which is what we really want to focus on. If I had in this room right now that CEO, the guy who is your friend, and anybody else you spoke with before they actually made you the offer,
yes,
what would they say is the reason? What did you do in the interview process or post-interview process that made them say, yes, we want to have Neil Cohen?
My guess, and, you know, obviously you don't want to reach too far over and pat yourself on the back, but my guess is that this guy can deliver what he said he could deliver. He told us he could do this, and he came in and he did it. And so I met and exceeded expectations.
What did you do to prove that you could deliver before getting hired?
I asked them, you know, what they were looking for. What problem were they solving for? And they were very clear, we think we're trying to solve for this. I said, well, let me tell you how I think I can help you solve your problem.
That's critical.
I could do this. This is what I can come in and do for you immediately. And most of it, for example, where I was going is they had just banked a lot of money from Motorola Solutions and Qualcomm. So an $8 million round. It had never really had a major marketing program. It was kind of duct tape marketing, all guerrilla. And at a very low budget. And while they were being effective and good with that low budget, they needed somebody to come in. They were very tactically based marketing. Like, we needed this today, go do this today, versus strategically based marketing. So I told them, look, I could come in. I'll be able to look at what's going on. I can give you create a strategic marketing effort for you. And let's get away from task-based marketing to strategic-based marketing.
Because you had such a good track record, you were able to just to talk it. With my clients, many of whom they're paying me as a career counselor because they don't have the resume that you have. They don't have the experience. I ask them to go one step further because you think it's a good idea. If they, yes, absolutely help try to identify what the real need of the company is, and then either get your butt off the chair and go to the whiteboard and draw what you would do, or if you can't think that quickly on your feet, instead of writing a stupid thank you letter afterwards, to write a proposal saying, you know, obviously I don't know all the exigencies that exist in your company,
right,
but I want to give you a sense of the way I think. Here's how I might go and tackle about the problem and write a little one-pager. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And that's dead on. I think when people hire a consultant or they're bringing in outside expertise, what they want is a point of view. I often will go into some places and I'll have no experience in the category. And I'll make something up. Let's say when I did microfuel cells, I didn't know anything about microfuel cells. But what you try to do is while you might not have category experience, you might have solved that kind of problem before. And what I try to do, what I've always tried to do with my clients is that I don't look at the category problem they have. I look at the marketing problem they have. Oh, I've solved that before. Oh, you're trying to create a new market category. Oh, you're trying to compete against a superior player with bigger finances. Oh, you're rebranding yourself because your brand is that problem I've solved. So let's look at it from that perspective versus you've got a consumer electronics industry problem or you have a enterprise software industry problem. And I think that's problematic of how people tend to look at things. The experience that people are hiring is, do you know how to deal with the issues that they have, not the industry that they're in?
I have a lot of clients who are unable to pitch their transferable skills, frankly, because they're just not that quick learners. They know that it would take them too long to get up to speed enough, for example, on those fuel cells, so they can only apply for jobs where they really have the previous industry experience because they won't be able to be as quick on their feet. Am I right that if you're going to play that game and you're going to change industries, you know, in order for you to be able to pull that off in the interview process that, you know, yes, I'm mainly doing marketing, I can do this and this, I don't need to be a content expertise, but you need to be smart enough to at least learn enough about it so you can sound knowledgeable enough. Do you buy that notion?
I agree with you. As a consultant, it was my job to be smarter than my client. And when I say smarter, you have to bring something to the table that they don't bring. You can't replace 20 years of a category experience, but what they're lacking is objectivity. And, you know, there's this rinse-repeat mentality. You hear a lot with it when people have a lot of category experience. They say, like, oh, well, we can't do that. Well, why not? Well, it's not done that way. Well, why not? Well, because it's not. And that's why you don't get a lot of fresh thinking and fresh ideas. I always say category ignorance is your friend because you come in, you know, with a fresh perspective and a new look and a new set of ideas. It doesn't mean they're all right or dead on or they're all going to work, but at least you can ask the hard questions and challenge people and peel back the layers of that onion.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Neil Cohen. We are going to talk about careers in marketing, but the guy has, in addition to having been a consultant to major companies and nonprofits and government agencies and the like in San Francisco State on marketing, he just landed a full-time VP job. And so I'm trying to, because that is the holy grail for a number of our listeners, or at least listeners who know somebody who's looking for a job. I wanted to mine that little vein to see what lessons might be learned for us. But now let us indeed turn to the main reason why I brought your butt on the show, which is marketing careers. What are the major, most people, they even confuse sales and marketing. But even within marketing, there are many specialties. What is the difference between sales and the different niches within marketing? And where would you say, if somebody says, I like marketing, what are some of the, quote, hot areas?
Marketing is so broad. It's such a big toolkit. And I always say one of the challenges in being a marketer is that everybody's a marketing expert because we get exposed to it day in and day out. You get exposed to advertising and messaging and all that type of stuff. So everybody thinks they could do it. But there are so many different segments. So let's break down into a couple of areas. For example, you could be on agency side or client side. So let's start there. So those are two broad categories.
Those are advertising agencies, which are dying, basically. Am I right? That's as much, most of it is going in-house. People are doing their advertising. Companies are doing it in nonprofits within their organization, rather than using the agencies, which are expensive.
No, I wouldn't say dying. I think people are tending to move away from the large engulf and devour, although there are still big ones out there, the Publicis, Omnicom-driven agencies, and a lot of the big, big multinational multinationals use those because they need that horsepower. Mm-hmm. I don't think agencies are dying. I think they're adapting to the marketplace. So, for example, instead of buying, they're parsing out into different things. For example, you'll have an agency that just buys media and plans media. You'll have an agency that just does metrics or research. You'll have an agency that just does boutique creative. All right, or design. You'll have an agency that just does packaging. So the agency business is kind of verticalized in kind of this specialization. And I know a lot of people, for example, that don't use the one shop, one fits all. At Visage, for example, we just had a meeting of all of our agencies the other day. I had one agency that was responsible for search engine optimization. I had one agency that was responsible for all my pay-per-click advertising. I had one agency that was responsible for my day-to-day creative needs. I have one that's responsible for creating my macro brand. I have one that's my PR agency, and I have one that's dealing with content, branded original content. And I brought them all together to work together. Why? I didn't want all my eggs in one basket. They were all expert and really good at what they do. And as long as I could manage those different things and make sure that they're integrated, which is why I brought all the agencies together, I'm in good shape.
So, dear listeners, he just packed a lot into that. In his presentation about who he's brought in to do his marketing, not only is it a really good example of how we are indeed in society emphasizing sizzle over steak, they're spending all the money on that. They can't be spending as much on R&D. But in terms of you, my dear listeners, or people you love who are interested in a marketing career, he's talked about niches, everything from packaging to branding to when he's called analytics, it's market research. That's focus groups. That's analyzing the Facebook data to see, you know, who's buying what and where and how. And it is indeed advertising, whether it's they're using the media, the old line media of TV and radio, or the new media of Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. Mm-hmm. Those are the niches. Is that right?
That's right. And then so you've got that agency side, which could be PR, branding. Content is a huge new category. If you're a good writer, because people, because of Facebook and Twitter and blogging, they need content, and branded content is a big place to go. We could talk about that more.
Let's talk about that right now.
Okay, great.
I've been doing this show for 24 years, so I know my listenership pretty well. I get a lot of people who write. So mm-hmm. if I am one of the people listening to this show who likes to write. And yes, while I might prefer to write poems or my novel or whatever, but I know I need to have a day job. And you just told me that writing and content is a new big niche within marketing. How would you advise me to go and try to get a writing-centric job in the world of marketing?
Well, first of all, get a perspective and blog about it. And so if you can show that you understand the medium and you can use the new ways of communication effectively, then you could go to a PR agency or a content agency and say, like, I understand how to write and develop content from a point of view and a perspective.
So what you're saying, for example, when you say a perspective, might it be, since, of course, we are in the world of convergence of some, you know, all technologies are going to be reducing to a phone. So 13 keys to branding your Android device for 2013 and beyond, is that the kind of focus for a blog you're talking about?
It could be. That's a good post, but you might say, like, I want to do a blog on how smartphones are impacting people's personal lives, and that's the general macro topic.
Good.
And so every day when I blog, I'll pick a different subject that right. I see walking down the street, the phenomena of everybody walking with their head down the street all day long. Let's write about that.
Right.
The phenomena of last come, first serve, where I'm talking to you right now and I get a text and I say, hold on a minute.
Right.
Right? That's a phenomena, right? Yeah. So a macro perspective, and then lots of posts about that and kind of owning that as a concept.
Am I correct that in general, the public, I'm always, again, as a career counselor, I'm obsessed with helping people find less crowded niches.
Yes.
And or more lucrative niches. Everybody's interested in the consumer. So if I, just dovetailing off your thing, if I were writing that book, if I were a writer and I wanted to write about the use of smartphones and people, how people in their personal lives use it, I would much rather pick a B2B application like that and even be more narrow. So, for example, how C-level executives are using their smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all kinds of ways that within that. Would that be too narrow or would that be smart?
I think vertical as long as there's a broad enough topic base, but that's an interesting topic that C-level executives might tune into. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're creating a proof point that you know how to create a point of view, create a topic, and then talk about it on a regular basis in a meaningful way and build an audience with it. And the reason why this content is so important, if you go over to the client side, which we haven't talked about, you know, one of the biggest things in marketing right now is lead generation and nurturing, the ability to bring in people organically or through paid search or through social to your website to visit, to show interest in your products, and then to nurture that relationship over time to get them to be a buyer and then to stay as a buyer.
I want to make clear for our audience, we're using a lot of jargon here.
Yes.
There is the agency side, meaning the company that is providing the marketing services. The client is the company that has the product or service that is trying to be marketed. And so if you are, for example, if you are, as what he was saying is you're trying to develop a relationship with the buyers, that's where social media is about. If I am making a widget, I want to have a presence on Facebook that is going to contests or what discounts or whatever, and news that is exciting about my product, new applications for it, on my Facebook all the time so that people are interested in signing up to, or maybe sign up for my newsletter that I'm going to have on my blog, so I'm building up a relationship. Is that correct?
That's a part of it. Building a relationship and nurturing a relationship with a customer can be through Facebook. It could be through Twitter. It could be through Pinterest. But it could also be when you come to the site, especially, let's say, in a business-to-business environment, that I come to your website, you say, oh, there's an interesting research report, and you're going to give that to me for free?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's an interesting policy, for example, at Visage. We offer somebody, do you have a mobile policy for your company? Here's a free outline of a mobile policy. So some of it is what you would call a consultative sell. I'm not going to sell my product, but I'm going to provide you with something useful so that you know that I understand the space and I understand you and your problem. And so you'll come back to me on a relationship basis for solutions as opposed to me just selling you all the time.
Yeah, one of the basic rules of sales is preliminary to sales, you have to give people what they want. It doesn't always work. It's a major investment of time, but you've got to be giving a lot of content in order to create a sense of indebtedness.
So on the client side, on the working for a company side, lead generation, creating, bringing leads in and nurturing those leads and keeping that relationship warm to a sale is a big area of development that there are not enough people
right.
to
By
do
the
it.
Way, Neil mentioned in passing Pinterest. It's growing. It's in a nutshell what it is. It's a picture-centric social media thing. Why don't you give us a – because it is growing. It's getting to be quite big. Tell us what Pinterest is.
Well, Pinterest is simply the digital version of cutting out something in a magazine and putting it into a folder, but it's done digitally. And you can basically pin up all these things in a category that interest you and collect it from all over the web, and you can have people see what you're interested in, and you can actually look for people who are interested in the same things you are, kindred spirits, so to speak.
You know, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Neil Cohen. He is an expert at marketing, lecturer in marketing at San Francisco State, been a consultant to major companies, nonprofits, including San Francisco State, in its effort to brand itself, and he just got a full-time VP job. So we've been talking about careers in marketing. You know, the last 5 or 10 minutes of this conversation, we have been focusing on social media marketing.
Yes.
And there is this little, you know, I am terrified of having my listeners jump on the bandwagon too late. In the 80s, it was cigar stores, and idiots would open after cigars had been hot for 3 years, they open a cigar store, and of course, they go nowhere. I'm worried that social media, Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and all and blogging and all the amount of time and effort that goes into that, that it may be what was current and hot is going to be just like another fad. Just like Lululemon has gotten really hot and now the stock is starting to tank because everybody needs a new thing. Abercrombie became a big thing for a while in a tank. Is it possible that what today, everybody's still running to Facebook, is still peeking, But in light of, for example, that Facebook stock is down from 38 when it opened to now 28, and I speak to many people who run companies, and they say, you know what? Because we can't parse out the ROI, the return on investment, mm-hmm. for the social media, spending all this money on social media marketing, we're going to actually start to think about dropping some of that advertising. Is it possible that the social media marketing side of marketing is actually starting to peak?
So I'll directly answer your question. Is it possible? Yes, it's possible. Do I think that's what's going to happen? No. Let me tell you why. Social is a tactic, not a strategy. So let's talk about that from a perspective of people will all say, like, what's our social strategy going to be? And my comeback to that is, that's not important. What's your business objective? And just like anything, you're going to have different strategies and tactics to achieve that objective. If social is a good way to achieve your business objective, then use the tactic. In every case, it might not be, or in many cases, it might not be. For example, social is not the answer to every business objective problem.
Who is it an answer for?
It depends on the problem you're solving for. So any company could use social, but what are you using it for? I'll give you an example at Visage. Our goal is to use social, right, so that we can show people that we know and understand that the space that we're in, that if they understand that we know and understand that the space that we're in,
right,
that they will trust us as a business source.
Because those of you just joining us, his business is social media marketing for business, a mobile operation. Obviously, you've got to show that you know the stuff, but for most products that are not specifically about social media, or is it really?
Well, we're about managing a company's mobility. So everything from tablets and smartphones to machine-to-machine communications, we give a company visibility into everything that they're spending so that they can save money and deploy more strategically and that type of thing. But our social strategy is going to be part of building credibility in our organization so that when somebody comes to us, they understand us. For other people, for example, a company I work with, Fandor, which is an independent film business, they see it as a way to create a community around independent film. Because the purpose, independent film needs that word of mouth, right, to sell itself, because they don't have the big budgets that the blockbusters do. So a company like Fandor will say, look, let's leverage social media because people who like independent films like to talk about movies. We'll use that as our community and build a community. And then if we can become the community for people in the independent film world, that'll drive more subscriptions, right?
If it was your own money, if you were Fandor, you've been in this business a long time.
Yes.
And it was the money coming out of your pocket.
Yes.
And let's say you had, I'm making a number up, you had a $10,000 budget for marketing.
Yes.
What percentage of it would you put into social media? And you were running Fandor. You were running that
independent. Well, $10,000 won't get me much anything. But their number one goal, let's go back to the business, is customer acquisition. So if I could use social media as a major part of that funnel, I might put half or more, but only because independent films, more than a lot of other things, lends itself to word of mouth and discussion.
Fair enough. I want to focus most of the rest of our interview on the specific career guidance,
yes.
But I have one more marketing question.
Yes.
I was reading your blog, and your blog, one of the core concepts that you present in your blog is that marketing is about identifying the one thing, the one differentiator that your product is better. But In reality, and this is why I kind of hate marketing, they're trying to create differentiators where there really are not substantial differentiators.
Yes.
Allied van lines versus Mayflower van lines.
Yes.
Northern toilet paper versus Charmin. United Airlines versus American. Nissan versus Mazda. Sierra Club versus the Nature Conservancy. Isn't it creating a bunch of hype? Isn't the whole idea of being in a career of marketing creating ostensible, not only ostensible differentiation, in fact, that a product is better, when in fact it's smoke and mirrors?
So good marketing is about being the one thing. Okay, and I don't think a lot of people market well, and I think you gave your listeners a lot of examples of why I consider mediocre or not very good marketing. What happens in a marketplace is once there's a new product, that product comes in because it does something really well. Typically, new people will come into that category, and you'll have a mirror image because they'll come in and say, yeah, they're doing that, but we'll do this better. So now you've got a whole bunch of companies in the space, and they all do one thing a little bit better than the other. But what are they doing? They're looking at their competition, and they're saying, boy, we're weak at that. We have to raise our weakness. And by focusing on their weakness, they leave their strength behind. So over time, you have this homogeneity that comes in so that everybody is like each other because they keep trying to match each other's features. That's called a thing called product augmentation. You augment two ways, by adding a feature to an existing product, like now wider. Tide is now wider than ever, right? Or by adding a flavor, you know, Diet Coke, Vanilla Coke, or that type of thing. So that's how people tend to compete in the marketplace, and that's why your listeners see everything in the marketplace looking so bland and the same. What happens is companies that focus on what they do better than anybody else. So, for example, in-flight comfort and entertainment. So now you have JetBlue and Virgin, which has this defensible position because they're new airlines. They've got these wonderful entertainment systems. They've got more room, leather seats. Everybody looks snazzy and great, a better experience in the sky. And they market that, and they own that. But the other people in the space, except for Southwest Airlines, who says we're going to be low price, they don't have a very good message. It's like, you know, if your competition can say what you're saying, it's bad marketing.
Let's turn to the career, the job seeker.
Yes.
Again, I'm trying to picture my listenership. My listenership, a large percentage of them have college degrees, mm-hmm. and most of them are in liberal arts. They may have a master's degree, but they've got a liberal arts degree, or maybe they were a social worker or a teacher that got burned out and they just can't deal with the stresses of the classroom anymore or whatever. And they say, you know, I need to make some money. I want to make money. I want to go into market. I like the idea of marketing. I like the idea of communication. If I have a liberal arts degree and I'd like to start a professional career in marketing, and let's say I'm your brother.
Mm-hmm.
It could be your sister, of course, either way. What advice would you have for me in 2030, as we enter 2013?
The first thing I would do is, and I think you've probably counseled people, is what are your strengths? You know, are you a good writer? Are you analytical? You know, see where you fall on the food chain of what you can do before you kind of look at the realm of marketing of where you can go.
Take each of the marketing niches and tell me with one or two attributes that are quintessentially critical, and as well tell me whether you think the job market will be relatively robust in the major niches within marketing.
Okay. Well, I would say that if you're analytical, if you're a very analytical person, you're good with numbers, you can crunch it and look at things, that there's probably a lot of opportunities on that side.
On the market research side?
Well, I would say data analytics, data mining, okay. Research. I think that's only going to go north.
Right, agreed. Continue.
I would say if you're a good writer, if you're good with words, that there's a lot of opportunity there. You know, based on my experience, writing, people don't write well in general.
So let's say I have that blog. I've got that blog that you told me to write. Now, let's say I've got this blog, so I've established some credibility in marketing. We talked about it being perhaps, you know, the use of the way executives use social media marketing, use smartphones. Now I've got the blog. How do I go about getting hired? A middle class, I don't need to get rich, but I need to make a middle class living with benefits. If I'm your brother, what do you tell me to do?
Then you start researching some of the companies that are in those categories.
How do I find them?
They're out there.
How do I find them?
Okay. Well, from the marketing analytics side, actually there's a couple of places you can go. For example, there's a TechCrunch is a great place online. They have their Crunchbase. So almost any company that's in the world of technology, you can find it there. And most of the analytics companies are technology companies. So something like that would be a good source.
We're talking about writing.
On the writing side, there are agency, that's a great question. And I'm going to come back to you in a couple of seconds as I deep into the recesses of my, personal hard drive to find
Here's
that.
Here's my shot.
Yeah.
There's too many. Every company needs writers, you know, for their blogs, for their internal communication, external communication. There, it's probably as a way of narrowing down. Pick a vertical you care about.
Yes.
You know, pick if you are not about fashion, find the San Francisco-based fashion companies. If you are not about the environment, find solar companies and narrow your universe that way.
I would agree with that. I think when you go in to look at these jobs, you're saying, what advice would you give somebody? When you target people, make sure you put yourself on the food chain of where they're going to be, where you're going to be able to help them, what your value add is to that organization. So when you come in, this is what I think I will be able to do for you. This is how you will benefit from hiring me.
Tell me, I want to get two more of these niches and what kind of skill is most central to them. Two niches that you are optimistic will be going north, that will be growing over in 2013 and beyond within marketing, and what is one or two key attributes or skills that are critical for that particular niche?
Well, project management is in huge demand. So it's somebody to make sure that the trains run on time. And it's actually hard to find people who are very good at keeping everything moving, keeping everything synchronized. For example, you know, look at the case study I set for Visage. I've got five agencies working together, you know, or six agencies working together against projects and goals and making sure all of that happens on time. That is an area that you could do either on the agency side or on the client side.
Notice again, dear listeners, what he said in passing, the case statement. You cannot get a job anymore with a resume or cover letter, especially if you don't have an MBA from Harvard, and especially if you don't have an absolutely clear work history of ascendancy. You have to do things that show you have the stuff. You have to demo it, whether it be being very active in a LinkedIn discussion group, whether it is sending a case statement, whether it is after your interview writing a proposal for what you would do. I've told this story once before in the show. I had a guy who was applying for a sales job for an environmental hazardous remediation firm that put hazardous material on railways. What he did was, after the interview, he went and researched all the federal agencies that could possibly buy his services and wrote the name and contact information of 25 of them. And he sent this to the employer and said, here is 25. I have 100 more. Hire me. I'll show you the rest. He got hired. We are, unfortunately, in this unprecedentedly difficult economy. Don't let the unemployment rate that is kind of flat 8%, which is bad, but it's much worse than that. More people are working part-time, temp, on little projects for crappy pay. You want to make a middle-class living? You must raise your game. Mm-hmm. It is these demos that will get you hired. Resume, cover letter, and a polite little thank you note ain't gonna work anymore.
Can I give you an example?
Please.
A student just out of college wanted to come work at Visage. We just hired her. She heard about the fact that the company was hiring. She started following the company on Twitter and Facebook.
Right.
She started retweeting.
Right.
And reposting.
And then asking, right, exactly.
The stuff about the company.
Exactly.
She learned about the company. She then started, she saw that the company CEO did a video. She responded to that video in a creative way.
Exactly.
She got into the interview, and everybody at the company knew who she was because she had been tweeting and retweeting about the company through her personal network.
I always like to add value. So one tip beyond that is, after you've done all that retweeting and built a relationship, you then have to make the ask. You say, you know, I've got a great idea for you. Would you send me your email address? And now you've got the conversation going.
And she did. Mm-hmm. And she got hired, and on her... Now it's her second week of work, and she's already had an impact. On her second day on the job, she tripled the number of visits to our website through social media.
Terrific. All right. I think I want to give our dear listeners one or two shots at you. If you or someone you love is interested in a career in marketing, doesn't know how to proceed, or is in marketing and maybe your career is floundering, or just want to take it to the next level. We got a marketing dude here. And it's Neil Cohen. He is a lecturer in marketing in San Francisco State, been marketing consultant to entities from SIGA to a fuel cell company to San Francisco Airport. You can ask him a question, and I'm here, too, to supplement. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go right to the phones. We got calls on the line already. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Mr. Cohen, for emphasizing the difference between tactic and strategy. You don't know how many times I have to explain that. And Marty, I wanted to speak to your point about sizzle, not steak, which often comes up in your shows. And while it's true that there is a lot of sizzle and it seems like diminishing steak, it's also true that branding professionals and marketing professionals are looking for new ways to connect brands with meaningful, transformative actions and not just empty words and images. Mm-hmm. So please bear that in mind.
And that's a goal we can all embrace. We should elevate the profession. Neil. Thank you for the call.
Thank you very much. Sizzle, not steak. Just one thing. I wrote a column a number of years ago. I used to be a columnist for Clixie, and I wrote a column called Thinking Inside of the Box is Actually Thinking Outside of the Box. And the reason is that everybody goes into marketing. Everybody wants to have the big creative idea, but they want to throw the Hail Mary pass without being able to block and tackle. And what I try to tell companies all the time is that great marketing is built on an amazing foundation, and that if you don't build that foundation, you can't have the big breakthrough.
I'm going to want you to give me a specific example of that, but I want to give out the phone number one more time. If you have a question about marketing, especially marketing careers for Neil Cohen, phone number 415-841-4134. That's the number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. Give me another example.
I'll give you a perfect example. Give you a very practical example. A client, and I won't say who they are, but had very high customer acquisition goals. It was a consumer-based product, and they wanted to go out and spend a lot of money to get people to come in and subscribe and purchase to their business. What happened, though, is we couldn't do it. Why couldn't we do it? Because behind the scenes, their website couldn't track a campaign. If somebody came to their website wanting to buy, they didn't know where they came from. They couldn't find them. They didn't know how they got them there. They wouldn't have any analytics or information. So if they might as well have taken any money they spent on proactive marketing, no matter how creative it would have been, and flushed it down the toilet, because they wouldn't have had the ability to A-B test, see what did work, what didn't work. So we had to spend the time and money behind the scenes for 2 months. What do we want to measure? What do we want to track? How are we going to bring people in? What are the funnels going to be? Let's see if those work. Let's test those things a little bit before we turn on the spigot and start spending a lot of money. Okay, a lot of blocking and tackling, a lot of thinking inside the box before you go with the big creative idea to get everybody excited and come in.
Good example. Right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Neil Cohen. What is your question or comment for him?
I have a question about my career. I have a branding background, and I do a lot of content production, and I've done project management. When I search for content writing, I come up with 538 million sites. As well, I have a lot of input in my discussions on LinkedIn. They garner hundreds of responses usually, and my dialogues are very active. The discussions I'm in are really very vital. So I'm wondering, how can I make use of this to further my career, and what other insights and recommendations would you have for me?
I have one more question for you. What are you passionate about? Is there any topics or categories or companies?
I'm passionate about branding and about taking branding to the next level, because I think it's really exciting. And I know people think it's invasive and it's fluff and whatnot, but I don't see it that way at all. I see it as instrumental and transformative.
I would agree with that. Are there any vertical categories that you like? Let's say Marty was saying earlier, are you interested in green tech or mobility or anything like that?
I'm interested interested in how companies can practice what they promise and ally themselves with meaningful change in order to benefit society as well as make money.
And you know, I don't know if you're aware, but there's a new category of company that's it's kind of a mix between a for-profit and a nonprofit, where the profits of those companies go back to serve charity. So like Tom's is a company like that.
Social entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Right.
I am aware of that. And I'm interested in, I mean, that's interesting. And I think that's they're on sort of the avant-garde of this idea, but I think the idea is evolving to have far greater reach and not just be limited to those companies who specialize in that.
Right, but I'm thinking is that you've got this amazing ability to have a point of view, to write well, and you understand brand, and that if you're passionate about some of these types of companies, that maybe find an organization in that category and go to work for them on the content and branding side.
How do you think I should search for that? What is your recommendation for doing that?
Neil's just been pointing to me. So I have a thought here, first of all. I think you're absolutely right. I'm seeing even the most mainline conservative companies are pushing when they're advertising that, they're talking about their social responsibility mission. So I think that is a tidal wave that is growing. And that sounds like, listening carefully to you, that sounds like what's your brand. It's not a vertical issue. It's taking a mainstream company and turning them to doing what the Toms used to do or the Eileen Fishers used to do and making a mainstream company make a bigger component, the triple bottom line, not just bottom line, and then using that to brand themselves. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely spot on.
Okay. So what I'd like you to do then is, then, you know, when you are, it sounds like you're not currently employed. A brand name company is not going to hire you. You're going to want to have proof of concept at a small company. I'd encourage you, even if it's, I want you to use a filter like a geographical region. It could be if you live in Berkeley or you live in the East Bay, find companies that are in a reasonable commute because the traffic is ridiculous. Go and find companies in Berkeley and in Emeryville that are mainstream companies. Go to the Chamber of Commerce. Get their directory. Find a company that maybe has 100, 200 employees, not 10,000, that therefore is big enough to be able to do some marketing, but that is pretty much a mainstream company. It could be a construction company. It could be a food service company. It could be a trucking company, a drayage company. But find a company that's of just enough size to hire a marketing person and then show them, give them some proof of concept. Give them an example of how they could brand themselves if they're interested in appealing to the local market, which is so interested in social responsibility, how their trucking company or whatever, by making them appear, they're making their brand more socially responsible, can differentiate themselves in the marketplace, and that's how you're going to get your first job. And once you do a good job with that, make sure you keep a portfolio and document everything that you've done so that you can then move on to a big company, maybe Bank of America next or whatever, and make them more socially responsible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, Bank of America has been one of my clients, and I do have quite a large portfolio, but just not directed in this particular way,
right,
which is, I think, what you're speaking to,
yes,
and I appreciate your advice.
Okay, thank you very much. Neil, please, you get the last word.
Well, it's not the last word. There's this concept in marketing, and it also goes in careers, called earning permission. And the example I always use is McDonald's many, many years ago tried to have pizza. And if you can imagine the as many ways as you could package up dough, tomato sauce, and cheese, you know, fry it, bake it, grill it, you name it. And it was never successful, even though in taste tests, they would beat the Pizza Huts and Domino's of the world. And the reason why it was never successful after scores of years of testing this is because the consumer never gave permission to McDonald's to be a purveyor of pizza on a fast food basis. The same thing is true about work. If you do not earn permission to do something in the mind of your the potential employer or a company where you currently work, for example, if you're just writing press releases right now, nobody's going to let you write a 30-second television ad because that's too much of a chasm to leap. But they might let you write a brochure. And then after you write a brochure, they might let you write a sales sheet. And then after you write a sales sheet, they might let you write a radio ad.
Anyway, thank you very much for your call. Hopefully that was helpful.
Yes, very. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot for the call. We only have a few minutes left. You know, you were a consultant for 12 years, you said.
Yes.
You know, everybody, you know, we live in an era where everybody's so insecure that everybody wants a secure job with benefits. But a lot of times people can't get that. And so they feel forced to hang out a shingle. If, let's say, I you know, my resume just ain't that great, so I'm not able to get hired and by a company that's willing to pay me for more than, you know, they'll pay me $3,000 to provide a brochure, but there's no benefits, and then I'm spending 2 months looking for that job. It's crazy. I end up making 10 cents an hour. So I figure, okay, I feel stuck, at least part-time. I gotta hang a shingle. So let's just take an example, because you're talking about, we've been talking about writing people, so let's forget about writing. Let's say I am a project manager type. That was another one. Let's say I'm a project manager type, and I need to hang out a shingle, a marketing project manager type guy, or woman, of course. What should I do so that I can, what would you do if you were to advise me on how I can make a living as a marketer, say as project management or in data analytics or whatever?
It's kind of the three P's, you know. First, what you want to do is understand your audience. Who are you going to be talking to? Who's that hiring manager or the person in that organization that is going to be making that hire for that, let's say, product management job? So you need to understand them. And what you have to need to understand is you have to let them know where you're going to fit on their food chain.
How do you do that? How do you find this stuff out?
Well, if you're in that category, you'll know that, gosh, if I'm going to be a project manager in this particular category, you should know who that hiring manager is. It could be a head of marketing. It could be a director of product. It could be whatever that category is, but you should probably know who it is that you're going to be going in and talk to. And what you want to know, what you want to be able to do is say, in your food chain of hiring from full-time employee to consultant, this is where I'm going to live, because they might have other agencies or other vendors. So you have to productize yourself. You have to create a product. So when I come in, this is exactly what I do. Very focused, and this is how I do it, and this is how I charge for it, so that that person who's doing the hiring can, for better or worse, neatly understand what it is that you do and how it fits in their day-to-day and how it's going to help them do their job better.
We're just about out of time. We've got time for a 15-second answer. What's one more thing, or one thing you want to reemphasize, that regarding marketing careers you really want my listeners to remember?
It's not where you start, it's where you finish. Look for the great opportunity that's going to help you grow. Don't worry about the paycheck. If you're any good, the paycheck will come.
Well, Neil Cohen, I'm sorry I can't give you a paycheck. We neither of us get paid for doing this, but I do thank you for being our guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
It's been delightful. Thanks, and thanks to your listeners for calling in.
Very good. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers, I swear. And I'll talk with Hannah Pushter about careers as a medical technologist. That's what we more commonly call lab tech. It's one of the few bachelor's level professions with apparently a real shortage. And there's all kinds of cool new medical tests you'll learn a lot about. It should be kind of fun. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.